Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you are a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
And it's recording already, so. Oh,
look at that.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about...
What are we here to talk about? Shudder.
Shudder. That's it.
Yep.
Before I give my recap, though, I have thrilling stuff to share.
Really? Is this thrilling stuff what's new with you?
It's not thrilling.
Oh.
Yes. What's new with me? I went with some friends.
This is the rockiest so opening exciting. We've ever done.
I know. I'm like, should I talk about this or that? I don't know. I went with my husband and some friends, and Katie was there, and we went to go see 28 Years Later. I loved it.
I loved it too.
It made me feel feelings.
So many feelings.
Like I had watery eyes.
Beautiful feelings. Beautiful, tragic. Like,
yeah, it was so good.
Yeah.
I mean, some people liked it and loved it or hated it.
It was so different.
It was very, yeah.
Not what I expected at all.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess because I'm not doing spoiler really, but it's kind of in a three-part type of film.
Yeah.
And it's a coming-of-age story and it's beautiful. And the lead actor, the boy who plays Spike, he does such
Alfie
a great job.
Something.
Yeah, he does such a good job. I loved him. And I loved Ralph Fiennes in it. And I just, you know, really enjoyed his mother, too. And I love the actress. She's so good in Killing Eve. Mm-hmm. She plays an assassin who's, like, freaking mental.
Yeah.
And she's really fun. But she just played an amazing... She was great. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And I decided if I was in that world, I would be dead in a day, basically. I'd be like, oh, something's on the ground slugging around, or something's chasing me as fast as possible, or something's massive and giant.
You're like, I can't live with this. There's just so many dips everywhere.
There's just so many schlongs and threats. I would be toast. Yeah. So that the world's not meant for me. I'd be like, take me. I'm done. I can't fight anymore. And take my kids. That's just what it is. What it is.
We'll all go down together.
Yes. Done with the ship. Anyway, that's about it. So I think anyone who has not seen it should go see it.
Definitely.
It was beautiful. I loved it. I'm excited they're doing the Temple of the Bone Temple, I think is what the sequel or the next one is called. It comes out in January. Mm-hmm. And it's directed by the same director who did Candyman, the remake of Candyman.
Nice.
So I'm excited. And I think it directly has more, I'm guessing, about that ending of 28 Years Later and also Ralph Fiennes and his bone temple that he created.
Okay, so maybe like a little backstory for that
character?
I think
maybe. Okay. I like it because he's really intriguing.
Yeah.
And you want to know kind of the why he does what he does.
Yeah.
And who he is. And he's a GP. He has a lot of compassion, mm-hmm. You know, for the sick and infected. He doesn't consider them he thinks of them as his patients, essentially, I think. And he has a lot of compassion for people he comes across, mm-hmm. Infected or not. So he's very compelling character. And I love Ralph Fiennes anyway. So mm-hmm. I'm excited. So
nice.
Anyway, what's new with you?
Well, I was struggling to come up with something because I have been doing nothing.
And we just saw each other.
Yeah. But it did occur to me, there is one thing that I haven't, even really, talked with Meredith much about that's been, one of the few things keeping me busy since I've been on summer break is, Grace has her permit. So Tommy drives, he got his license at like maybe While he was 16, but not right when he turned 16, because, you know, there's a lot more hoops to jump through now to get your license than when we did.
I was in Texas.
Yeah, they just like handed you the car keys when you were 14 and were like, go with God.
They're like, go on the tractor.
They're like, oh, and by the way, our interstate speed limit is 80 miles an hour.
By the by.
And people still get pulled over for speeding.
No, I did a driving school and then I had to take a test and then you get your license.
Yeah. So with, you know, with the kids, the process now, like they have to do online classes and get like a certification from those before they can take their permit test. They have to pass their written permit test and then they have to have their permit for 6 months before they can take their behind the wheel test. And so, Grace passed her permit test a couple months ago, and so she'll be able to test for her license, her actual license, in November. And so now it's just, you know, getting her as much practice as possible so that not only so she passes the test, but so that once she has her license, I actually feel comfortable sending her out in the world driving.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is that I was not a part of Tommy's process at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think I only drove with him with his permit, like I rode with him like maybe once, and I wasn't even the only adult in the car. Mm-hmm. Because that was during a time when they were spent so much of the his time was spent on hockey and hockey travel, and so much of the practice that he got with his permit was driving he and Tom to his hockey practices. So I wasn't a part of that, and so it's kind of like we unintentionally divvied it up. Like basically Tom taught Tommy how to drive. Like he did all of the work for Tommy's permit and practice and license. And now I'm kind of the one doing most of the work with Grace, just in terms of riding with her, like giving her feedback, giving her corrections, like explaining stuff.
Are you explaining it to her about how to combat as a female tunnel vision?
You never drive while you're on your period because driving you're too with boobs. Emotional.
Sorry, I'm just channeling. I'm thinking of like Leslie Knope when she's talking about being a woman having to, yeah. You know, doing all the stupid crap.
Yeah. And she, like, you know, she was pretty good. Like from the first time we went out, I was pleasantly surprised at where she was already at that point. You know, just from the like three. Because then after, oh, that's the other thing. So they have to do the online courses. And then, but once they get their permit, they can't use their permit, even with like their parent or whatever, until they complete 6 hours of professional behind the wheel classes.
Mm-hmm.
So like she had her permit, but she still couldn't legally drive with us in the car until she did these classes. And so she had, it was like 3 2-hour sessions with this company, you know, and so whatever she took away from that, like she was already in decent shape the first time I rode with her. And she's very cautious, which I guess, you know, you don't want them to be like reckless out sure. the gate. But I'm like, OK, baby, you need to go a little faster. You need to do this a little more. Come mm-hmm. on. You got to have a presence, right? Like you got to. Really make claim your space on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's getting pretty comfortable, but and she's pretty good with taking feedback. No accident. But one thing is she 100% of the time turns the wheel the wrong way backing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it's kind of a joke with us now. So like if she's getting ready to pull out of a spot, I'll be like, okay, so which way do you think you should turn the wheel? And she goes, this way. I'm like, nope. Every single time her intuition tells her to go the wrong way. And yeah. I remember that being something that took a little bit of practice to grasp when I started driving,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's like, oh, I want to go in this direction. So I turn it's like, no. And they're like, oh, you got to turn it in the direction you want the rear of the car to go. But it's not necessarily intuitive.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I'm like, we've identified the one thing that you really need to work on.
Yeah.
Everything else, it's just practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the understanding is like where your eyes go. Mm-hmm. Is more like where the wheel will go if you're just, you kind of get more in tune with your car.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it. Like, it's just, you need to do it so much.
Rote memory. Really.
Yeah. Practice mm-hmm. and yeah. And muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not, I don't super enjoy it. Like being the passenger while she's driving, it's a little, I'm still a little kind of not anxious, but just like, okay, like, because it's my responsibility to make sure that she doesn't, you know, like crash the car or hurt anybody or whatever. But, you know, we're getting there. And she wants to do it all the time. You know, she goes to the gym at the Y, which is like a short bus ride from our house. But she's like, let's go to the Y. I'm like, all right, get in the car. She drives to the Y. I drive home. Then I drive back to the Y. And she drives us home from the Y. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Really? We have to do 5 more months of this. But, you know, it's one of those things that, like, you know, when people talk about parenting struggles, I feel like there are a lot of things in the kids' adolescence that I didn't think about until it happened, like breakups. Like, I was not, when dealing with, like, the first breakups for both of them, I was like, holy shit, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think about what's going to be difficult of being a parent, like, teaching them to drive, that doesn't really sound like, oh, like, that's going to be, you don't really think of that or focus in on that, of like, what's hard about being a parent. But it kind of sucks.
The minutiae.
Yeah, you don't, it's not something you should look forward to.
No, I'm going to be approaching that eventually, pretty, within the next year, probably.
Yeah, because Charlotte's 15 now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she could be doing her online courses already.
She did something at school.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, because she'd be eligible for her permit in a couple months if she gets it done.
She did her school, something, driving school at her high school.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it entailed. Yeah. I'll have to ask Rachel. I always ask Rachel everything. Yeah. I'm like, what does this mean? And she's like, well, because she already has her older teenager, so she's already done it.
So yeah, it's possible, like, that, like, whatever the school offers fulfills that requirement. And it's just my kids had to do it online because they didn't have that at their school.
Yeah, maybe.
So it's possible that since she completed that at school when she's 15 and a half, she can. And also, you can take the permit test online now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be on a webcam, obviously.
Yeah.
And Grace failed it twice online. So then she ended up having to go in. And the third time she took it in person, she passed. But yeah, so she could. In just a couple months.
I might have her stepdaddy help her drive, learn how to drive. He's very good at that. He's helped a lot of people learn how to drive. So yeah. I'm like, that might be your...
Oh, yeah. If you could outsource it, I highly recommend it. Your
wheelhouse, so to speak.
Yeah.
His wheelhouse. Get it?
I do. Yeah, good one.
I'm like, get that out of here. Okay. Moving on.
We're here for.
Yeah. What year did this come out? I have no idea. 2008, I want to say?
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you. That sounds right. That was like in the peak era of remaking Japanese horror movies. But didn't we decide that the original for this one was Thai?
It's a Thai movie.
Yeah. But we were still, Americans were still ripping off other countries' scary movies.
Correct. This did come out in 2008. So my memory is correct. So this one I'm covering, it's titled Shudder. I couldn't be arsed to write Jane, the actress's name.
Yeah.
I remember her from, I want to say she's in Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah. Was she that girl?
Am I misremembering?
But I mean, if she's not, they look exactly the same.
Yeah. I know for sure she was in, I can't remember. It's like a
Rachel Taylor.
It's a Marvel show.
Okay.
And it was really good. Jessica Jones, and she plays her really good. Jessica Jones is a really good friend who's also like a news anchor or news reporter person.
Yeah.
And she's really fun. But throughout the movie, her Australian accent comes out like nonstop. And that drives me. You know how little things grind my gears.
Yeah.
So she's in that. She's pretty recognizable. And then, of course, there is Joshua Jackson, who plays the husband, who we all know and love. Katie more than me. But
yeah. Well, and it's funny, not the first time I've gone on at length about him on this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember bringing it up on the Bram Stoker's Dracula episode.
Really?
Yeah, because it was when we were talking about my feelings about vampires and how, you know, like the whole Team Edward, Team Jacob from Twilight, and then I dubbed that into being Team Jacob is just how I was Team Pacey and not Team Dawson, because
and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
She's like, dude, is she still here?
I don't even know what you're saying. That show, Dawson's
River.
Dawson's
Body of Water.
Yes. I've actually never watched an episode of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not, I've gone back and rewatched it. I have it. I have the whole series on DVD. And it does, it doesn't hold up.
Oh, okay.
In that, I mean, it doesn't hold up in the way that, like, I didn't watch Gilmore Girls, but it was like that era of TV, not teen drama, but, like, you know, there was a zone there.
Yeah.
And if you loved it at the time, you go back to it now and it's so nostalgic and you still love it.
So you can still appreciate it.
Yeah. But if you were seeing it for the first time, not like, and especially if we showed it to teens now, like our kids now, mm-hmm. would not. Find it.
Charlotte
redeeming.
Loves Gilmore Girls. She watched the whole thing last summer.
Really? Okay,
she's
so maybe I'm
it.
Underestimating.
Yeah. And I rewatched My So-Called Life.
I never saw that because, yeah, I didn't have cable. So
I didn't either. I think I probably caught some episodes at friends' houses.
Uh-huh.
So
oh, I didn't have friends either.
No,
it's true. I had friends, but they didn't have cable
I
either.
Had friends. yeah, but Jordan Catalano with, you know, Jared
Leto.
Was that
Jared Leto? Yeah.
Oh, he was pretty dreamy. Mm-hmm. Now he's a creep, but.
Is he?
He's like a creepy cult leader guy who's like predatory.
Gross. That's too bad.
Allegedly.
She doesn't want to get sued.
Because he has a lot of lawyers. So, allegedly, he's not great. Anyway, so Shudder, the movie we're here to talk about, opens with
Wait, no. Another tangent, please.
More tangents. Opens with a happy. You know, I used to watch Felicity.
And I looked it up, and Rachel Taylor was not the girl in Cabin in the Woods, but she was in Transformers.
Oh, okay. So maybe just blonde girls look the same.
Yeah,
thing,
no.
I
and I, when you said that, I was like, oh, that's totally her, because those actresses, if
they
you put them side by side,
similar.
You'd
okay.
be like, okay, they need to be cast as
all right,
sisters.
Fair enough. So it opens with a happy couple, Jane and her husband, Ben, who's played by Joshua Jackson. He unwraps a disposable camera and they want to take more photos. And because you see like little glimmers of them getting married and they're like, yay. And then they're suddenly at their on set in a house somewhere in their apartment. So they're off to Japan, and Ben comments on Jane being so cool with jetting off immediately to Japan.
After their wedding.
Yeah, like, he's like, our flight's in a few hours. And she's like, I'm so excited.
She's like, you better do me real quick.
I know, basically. So, and they're taking, like, photos. I remember those disposable cameras.
Oh, yeah, we did those at my wedding.
Yes, and I did too, the first one. And I never got them developed.
Oh, really?
And then after the divorce, I just threw them in the trash.
Oh, my God.
I don't care. Beautiful. Anyway, who cares?
You're welcome, Kodak. Free money.
So, after a lot of travel, Jane is driving the car, and it's late in the evening, and they're driving, and it's like wooded,
spooky,
woods,
misty,
and very. It looks
two lane road, deserted.
Right, and Ben's asleep next to her in the car. She eventually asks Ben for help because she's like, I think I'm lost, and yeah, I've been driving for a while. Can you help me check the map? And as they're kind of scrambling to find the map and figure out where they are, there's suddenly a woman in the road, and Jane hits her. She loses control of the car, and they end up on the side of the road in a tree. Mm-hmm. It's a big, you know, pretty big crash. It's not just like a little thump.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she hits her, and then you see her run over the woman, and then she like spins out in like four different directions.
Yeah.
Before going off and like slamming into a tree.
Yeah, it was not like a little fender bender situation. It was. No. It looked like a big deal. So they're on the side of the road, and before Jane passes out, she sees the woman in the road, and she's like, oh, my God, you know, is she okay? But then she passes out.
But, like, before she passes out again, she sees the woman in the road, like, start to rise up. Like, she said stand up, but she's, like,
sitting up. She seems like she's moving.
Yeah, like, and you're like, because you see her get really severely run over. Like, you see her go under the tires on the car, and then all of a sudden she's, like, she's laying on the road, but then she's, like, pushing herself up.
It's not something you would easily walk away from. So let's just say that. So she passes out, and a while later, and there's snowfall that happens, like, as they're kind of unconscious on the side of the road in the wreckage. There's, you know, some, you know, cold weather happens. Ben wakes up Jane, and she's distressed because she hit a person. And she's like, that girl, like, where did that woman go? And she's like looking, you know, freaking out because mm-hmm. she feels like she hit somebody very in a pretty bad way. Yeah. And where is she? And we need to find her and help her because that's my fault.
Yeah.
You know. But apparently she's vanished into thin air. They call the police. The police do a search and they don't find anyone. And Jane is pretty upset. She's worried. She's feeling really guilty. She's like, I can't believe I did that. Like, I need to find her and she needs help. And you know, if she's on the side of the road or in the woods somewhere injured, it's my fault. Yeah. And she feels responsible. But Ben tells, you know, Jane, it's an animal or something. And he tries to get her to just kind of move on. So because it's their honeymoon.
Yeah. It's whatever. Not romantic to run over a woman.
Yeah. He's like, you get over it. It's her honeymoon. So.
Stop spoiling everything.
Quipping a baby. So the two of them.
Hysterical.
Yeah. The two. Sorry. You're talking about teaching Grace how to drive. Quit getting that tunnel vision.
Oh, my God. There's a woman in the road, Grace.
The two of them are in a cabin. They're enjoying the scenery. And he wants to enjoy his short honeymoon before he has to go back to work. He's like, you know, we only have a few days here. So let's just try to move past that. I'm sure she's fine. You know, let's enjoy the time that we have here.
And well, it's a valid point. It's like she would still be there. Like if she's not still there, either you didn't hit anyone or she was okay enough to get up and leave.
Yes. Yeah. So days later, and then there's, I think I want to say Mount Fuji behind them and they're taking photos and he's like, let's take a few photos on the, I guess it's like the deck of their cabin. And she's like, it's so cold. He's like, no, come on, quick. And
romantic photos.
They have, and he's a photographer. So they're just taking photos all the time. And she seems to really enjoy that hobby as well. So she's taking a lot of pictures also. So days later, Ben takes Jane to his work in Tokyo. It's in a fancy office. He introduces Jane to his coworkers and other work colleagues. He's like roped into like a meeting. He's a photographer from a pretty big firm or I don't know what it is, a modeling agency of some kind.
I think it would make sense if it was like an advertising agency because like they would have a photographer on staff, but like his colleagues that are there, like one of them's a model agent but like they're not all photographers. And so but I just love that his one friend Bruno is from The Office.
Yeah. I'm like, Roy, when Roy, did you get you here? Doing? What are you doing here? So Jane is left to fend for herself for a bit until his boss shows the couple who's Bruno, his friend also, and Ben's like, thank you so much for getting me this job. He's like, of course.
Yeah. They've worked together in the past. Like they're old friends.
They're I think they all worked together for a while or like had a pretty strong friendship and bond in Tokyo before Jane was even in the picture.
Yeah, because like Ben like speaks Japanese.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, your average white guy. So it's like he's obviously like lived there and spent time there and worked there a good amount in the past for him to be fluent in Japanese.
Right, yeah. Which I never noted in my recap. So I'm glad you mentioned it.
What, that he speaks Japanese?
Yeah. Oh. I didn't really even consider that. So Jane's left to fend for herself for a bit until Bruno shows the couple their loft space that's like a workspace and also there's a living space as well. It's pretty nice. It's like a nice loft apartment in Tokyo, which is, you know, finding a big, huge, roomy place is not normal.
And he says they're the only, theirs is the only like finished apartment. So like nobody else lives in this building. It's just like their apartment and then on another floor, like the studio space that Ben's going to be like working in.
Yeah, doing a bunch of photo shoots and stuff in there. She's impressed with it. And then Ben's like, thank you so much for this opportunity. The place is awesome. I you know, we're really excited to be here. And Jane's pretty excited too.
Yeah.
The couple starts canoodling in their bed. They want to christen the apartment.
They're really horny for each other.
They're all horny for each other, taking photos of each other and smooching. Later that night, Jane has a nightmare about that girl that she hit with her car.
As one does.
Uh-huh. So then she gets up later and seems pretty deep in thought. She's just seems pretty guilty. Ben is massaging his shoulder because he's like, he's in pain. And he's like, I think I tweaked something in the accident. And it was pretty a big deal. You know, that the car wasn't in great shape after. Yeah. So you kind of be thinking that tracks a little bit, like, that he has some shoulder injured. Pain.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Jane comments that he needs to probably go get that looked at, you know, go to the doctor and get it checked out. They look at the prints from the romantic cabin shoot and there are weird bright blurs on the prints. And they're like, oh, that's kind of a bummer. The mm-hmm. the photos of them in front of Mount Fuji are kind of there's weird stuff on the prints and on the negatives as well. Mm-hmm. So on the way out of the apartment, Jane also notices a weird gross chair that I guess gives her the creeps. I'm not really sure why.
Well, it's velour to start with.
Yeah. Moving on. So she also looks in on at Ben and his crew as they're all working. There's lots of models. Everyone's very deep in the work. Bruno's there and they're like, okay. She gives a little wave and kind of goes to explore and take photos with her camera and explore Tokyo and the scenery and just kind of go check everything out.
Yeah.
Ben's assistant asks later. Oh, she takes a lot of photos. She takes a selfie, which is it's really awkward because those cameras were just like digital cameras, but it's not like with an iPhone yet. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're just facing the camera at yourself, taking a selfie.
Yeah.
Hoping for the best. You know, it's like you couldn't see yourself yet. Right. Yeah. Because it's not an iPhone where you can reverse the camera.
Screen, yeah.
So I forgot about that, actually. Taking photos with a digital camera mm-hmm. at yourself, not able to see what you're looking
like, hopefully all the faces are in this.
And it's like my nose with my head or the bottom of my face. So she gets scolded by a shopkeeper. He's like, you can't take photos in here. And she's like, oh, sorry. So
she's in like this casino type place, which made me wonder, like, I've never been to Japan, but I'm like, can they just have like slot machines? Like everybody's just sitting around playing slot machines for fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that when I was in Europe, a lot of places were like, please ask before taking photos. Mm-hmm. So also there's a kind of like
a privacy thing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, people want to give consent, I guess. So anyway, so she goes back to her loft and Ben's assistant. I never bothered to find out.
Remember. Seiko.
Seiko?
Seiko. Because I remember, like, I think that's the name of a brand of camera.
Oh, I don't know.
Or
also,
maybe
I didn't
keyboard.
Bother to find out. Ben's ex-girlfriend either. I didn't write it down.
Ben's well, the actress was Megumi, and I think maybe the character's name was Megumi too.
Megumi as well. Okay. Yeah. So Seiko asks to look at Jane's pictures, and she comments on the weird blurs that are also happening on her digital camera. Like, especially like herself. When you see her selfie, there's like weird light thing too happening, just like in the Mount Fuji, their honeymoon kind of
It's like a white too. Like kind of like ghostly blur.
Yeah. So she says, oh, those are spirit photos.
Yeah.
And Jane's like, what the fuck's that? Basically. And she tells Jane that her you know, my boyfriend is a spirit photographer expert and he has a magazine.
Mm-hmm. How convenient.
So she offers to take Jane to go meet him the next day. And Ben's like, yeah, you have a date or you have a friend now.
Oh, look at that.
So Jane's like, okay, fine. You know, whatever. She's cool to go.
Yeah.
So then later Ben and Jane go to meet a smarmy dude named Adam, who's a model rep, and Bruno's there too, his Ben's boss. And they all go way back and they talk about
the good old days
of them being creeps.
Yeah. Boys will be boys and all that.
Gross. The following, and Jane's like, she's like, okay, whatever. She didn't seem like particularly repulsed, but not exactly
enthusiastic.
Happy about it either.
Yeah, she's like, oh, these are your guy friends. Okay. That's great. Because she's never met either of them.
Right. It might be the vibe that you'd get meeting your husband's like frat.
Right.
Guys.
Yeah. That's like he maybe isn't that guy anymore that you met and got together with. But then you're like meeting these people. And it's like, oh, these were your friends back then.
And and you're like, oh, gross. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm glad he's a different guy. So the following day, Ben does a shoot and Jane and it's a pretty big shoot. It's on the steps. It's like has tons of models. Mm-hmm. It's out in the open. There's buildings and Tokyo in the background.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. It seems like there's a lot of production and money that's going into this. So she's like, okay, bye. You know, Jane seems really cool to let Ben do what he needs to do and go keep herself occupied and do other stuff. So she goes to talk to the spirit photography guy. His name is Ritsuo. And he confesses Well, she kind of is
observes.
She observes. She's at the magazine, and there's different editors there, and she's like noticing that they're photoshopping Spirits into different photographs, and she's like, "Oh, so this is like a load of crap."
Like, so that's all fake. It's not real.
And then he's like, "Yeah, there's a lot of pictures that are fake." But he started the magazine because of a photo of himself as a boy with his mother's spirit in the photo. And he's like, I have something to show you. Let me show you.
Yeah.
The basement, I guess, or this other room. And so he takes her down there and he's like, these are all photographs that are spirit photographs that are not fake. These are legitimate. Real. Yeah. These are legit. He tells her also about the kind of history of spirit photography. Why are there spirits in the photographs? There's different reasons: unfinished business, unrequited love, messages that need to be kind of communicated to people, the living. Mm-hmm. And there's all different reasons for why they would be captured in film.
Right.
He also tells her about a local medium that she should check out. He was featured in their his latest issue of the magazine, the Spirit magazine. He tells Jane that the photographs that actually cannot be faked have to be taken with a Polaroid.
Polaroid!
They're back. taken with a Polaroid because there's no negative. There's nothing that can be manipulated. Like when she saw the little photo editor guy like just
dragging a ghosty face into the corner of a picture.
Spirits are everywhere. That's his advice, and she's like, little seed planted to get a Polaroid camera. So then later, Ben is in the dark room and he's processing the photos from that big photo shoot.
But like there was that point during the shoot, right, where he like looks through the lens and he's like cleared the scene because he sees Megumi standing like in the middle of it with all the models. He sees her through the camera. And so he thinks that somebody's like wandered onto the set. And so he's like, clear the set or whatever so he can start taking photos. And then he takes his face away from the camera and just looks and there's no one there.
I totally forgot about that. I'm glad you remembered that. I don't know.
That was one point that I looked up when I was rewatching the movie.
Yeah, I must have been typing or something.
Yeah, like, look, what's that bitch doing there?
Well, because she like throughout the movie, you see this girl just randomly places.
Yeah, and she's wearing this like dowdy dress.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like a prairie dress, like this long
little flowers.
Shapeless, like long sleeve flowered dress.
Yeah, and like just, a flower like, her sack.
And other than that, she just kind of looks very meh. Like not, you know, dark hair.
And she just walks around and she's like, wah, wah,
wah. she's Debbie Downer.
Yes. I forgot about that. So he thinks he sees her and then she's not there.
Yeah.
He's processing the film and the photos and from the shoot. He's in a dark room, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, because I used to do that in high school and college, the dark room. And you have the different development.
Did you ever fool around developer. With someone in the dark room?
No.
What a missed opportunity.
I know, I'm such a loser.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I had my own apartment in college. So.
Well, no, I mean in high school.
Oh, in high school? No. Yeah. I didn't like anyone at school.
It did smell kind of bad in there. It wasn't, but you know, teenagers
very, like,
don't care.
Vinegary.
Yes,
smell.
Yeah. The fix had a rotten egg odor.
Yeah, it's not great. Not romantic. So he's in there. It's dark. There's the red light, of course, and he's kind of looking at the developing tray where you can see it. The images popping up on the photo paper. And he starts seeing the entity, the same girl from the accident and the shoot that he saw. And he's peering very closely at the photos. His face is very close to the tray of development stuff, chemicals. And he gets suddenly splashed with chemicals. And because he sees something weird in the photo. Yeah. And then suddenly he's just like splashed. And then he runs out of the dark room and starts kind of rubbing his face. He looks at the mirror for a moment and he thinks he sees blood all over his face. But then his assistant comes in and she's like, hey, what's going on? Are you okay? And he's like, ah, like he turns away from her. And then suddenly nothing's there.
Yeah.
Except for the chemicals.
Right. His eyes like a little red from the chemical getting in it. But the rest of his
face
there's
no
is fine.
Like bloody face. Yeah. So he's like, oh, gosh, that was weird. So then he, has to go deal with that weirdness. Meanwhile, Jane boards a subway car and she starts smiling randomly at a kid. And the kid starts looking at something just beyond Jane, and she doesn't really see anything as she's kind of looking behind her in the window. Mm-hmm. She's like, what's this kid staring at? He's like looking just past her.
Yeah. Which is like, it's kind of a fun way to prank people. Yeah. Just mess with people by just like staring behind them. Tom gets me with that all the time. Still, like, we've been together for over 20 years, and he'll be like, what? Like, look over my shoulder and be like, what's that? And I'll turn. I will still turn. And he's such a dick.
He's like, haha, there's nothing, dummy. And you're like, I trust in you.
Oh, no, I suck again.
I trust in you. So she doesn't see anything there until suddenly she sees that girl from the accident. And then suddenly the girl becomes a skeleton in the reflection of the glass in the subway.
Yeah.
And she screams. And she's like, ah, and all these Japanese people are surrounding
this. Goddamn Americans.
This crazy blonde American just yelling and yapping all the time in the subway car. But she's freaked out. And they're all like jumping up like, oh my gosh, are you okay? Like, yeah. They want to help, you know.
Yeah, they're not actually disgusted. That would be New Yorkers.
That'd be New Yorkers. Like, they'd be like, shut up.
They'd be like kicking her down the car to someone else.
God, kick the can. Get out of here. So she's, you know, kind of freaked out. She's jarred and she's walking home deep in thought because she saw something that freaked her out. Ben is in his apartment yelling about the film from his shoot being ruined, and his assistant's there, and she, you know, trying to kind of, ooh, sorry, you know, and Jane looks at the photos, and they also have the light and the spirits in it, and they're all around the models in the photo shoot. And so Jane tells Ben that she saw the girl from the accident, and she thinks that she followed them to Tokyo, and she thinks that she's dead and she has an axe to grind because she killed her.
Right.
You know, she ran over her and she's responsible, and they essentially got away with, I guess, a murder or manslaughter with if she was really hurt or killed and never found, she's responsible.
Yeah.
And Jane is pretty worried about it and feels like, well, now she's being haunted.
And Ben is not super receptive to this idea. He's still like, they're there, honey. Calm down. Yeah. You're being ridiculous.
He doesn't believe her. He didn't see any. There's no ghosts.
Right. No ghosts.
What are you talking about?
It's the same. She points out that it's like the same stuff that was on their honeymoon photos. And he was like, well, yeah, it was the same camera. It probably got damaged in the accident. Yeah. And so he's explaining away all this stuff. And he's like still really pissed off about this shoot going badly because, it like you said, it was so big. It was so expensive. Like, they can't just fix it or do it over.
Yeah.
And like, this is really embarrassing for him that this was like his first big shoot on this new job opportunity that he has. And he like, and it gets fucked up.
And it looks all like crap.
Yeah.
So he rebuffs her. He tells her, you know, today's not the day.
Yeah.
To be coming at me with his bullshit. And that he's sorry, but I'm not your fucking father.
And then you're like, ooh. And Jane's, we don't know what that means, but it doesn't
sound
good.
And Jane's like, how dare you? I mean, how dare you? No, she's like, you're dead to me.
She's like, how about go fuck yourself?
Yeah. That's a low blow, apparently. And Jane is pretty upset. We never get any more information about that.
Yeah, but you don't really need more than that. You know, like, you okay, like, there's an issues with her and her dad, and he knows about him, and it's not the thing to throw in someone's face in a moment like that.
She's like, ew, I hate you. So then later she's looking at the Spirit Photography magazine that has that medium in the issue, and she decides she wants to pay him a visit. So then on his own, Ben has to go to the doctor because throughout this, he's complaining about shoulder pain and neck pain.
And his friends are teasing him about being like an old man because hunched he's over. Like, yeah, he's got he's like a stiff neck. Yeah, and he's like not able to move comfortably.
He's like, owie, owie. because he looks like Mr. Burns a little bit, hunched over. The doctor doesn't find anything wrong with Ben, and he gives him some medication to manage his pain. But there's an issue when he's trying to weigh in. The nurse is like, what the hell's going on? And it's never really, like, fully explained, but she's like, oh, this is weird.
Because they don't show the scale in that scene.
No. So
she's just like making a weird puzzled face, and she's like set talking to herself kind of in Japanese.
She makes him get off the scale and then get back on, and she's like, I don't know what the hell is going on. Okay. So he's told, you know, walk it off. Here's some pain medication.
Stop being a little bitch. You'll be,
everything shows that you're fine.
Yeah.
Right. So Ben is back in the dark room again, and someone is kind of humming and stroking his face. He's deep in his work. He's looking down at
Hasn't learned his lesson. His eyes are right next to the...
Yeah, his eyes are right next to the chemicals again. He's facing down, and someone's humming and stroking his face. And he tells Jane, he's like, I'm really sorry about our fight earlier. I apologize. You know, I shouldn't have said whatever, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And suddenly there's a phone ring that's ringing, and he kind of like offhandedly tells Jane, who he thinks is Jane, mm-hmm. I bet that's the agency that wants to talk about the reshoot. But it's Jane on the phone offering to make him dinner and so they can talk it out, hash things out, and so they can figure out a plan.
But Jane, if you're on the phone.
Who was touching my face? Ben realizes that the person stroking his face wasn't Jane. He's like, oh, my gosh. And he goes to see who it was. Mm-hmm. And he goes into the dark room and sees it's the woman from the accident who has a random fly that comes out of her eyeball. Yeah. And then he screams in terror. And Jane hears him screaming and, you know, freaking out. So she runs home, and she's not very far from their apartment. And she finds Ben just sitting quietly with his back to her. You don't know what you're going to find.
In the shitty chair.
In that shitty, gross chair. And she turns him around, and he's like, just deep in thought, and he's like, I'm really sorry. You know, Jane, I'm really sorry. Like, I'm sorry about everything. Mm-hmm. What can we do? He's trying to, like, make amends in that moment, right. I guess. Jane tells Ben that she thinks the girl that she hit is upset with her because of the accident that happened. They need to figure this out. And Jane convinces Ben to go with her to visit the medium and act as a translator as well.
Yeah.
So Ben goes with Jane, and Ben translates. The medium puts his hands on the photos that Jane brought, and he says a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But on my version, did yours translate what he said?
There was no subtitles.
Okay, so mine didn't.
Yeah, so we're only relying on what Ben is telling us he's saying.
Right.
Which is important.
You assume that maybe he's not being completely honest in his translation.
Yeah, because then, like, when the medium gets, like, all pissed off and is, like, yelling at them, like, Ben won't even tell Jane what he's saying. He's like, this guy can't help us, blah, 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 blah. Like, he won't even translate what the man's saying at the end.
Yeah, and the medium does say a lot. And then Ben's like, well, we're on our own. We have to go.
Yeah.
And Jane's like, what was that about? And he's like, I don't know. He's just mad.
He's crazy.
And he's a scam artist. He calls him a scam artist. Ben goes back to work, and Jane looks at the photos from the shoot again and sees that the weird spiritual light is on Ben's work building where they have their agency or whatever.
The office building. Mm-hmm.
So at this point, she's going to figure this out herself. She's done asking for Ben's help.
She's Nancy Drewing this shit. Mm-hmm.
So she asks Ben's assistant, what's her name?
Seiko,
for a Polaroid. Like, can I borrow a Polaroid? And she's going to go investigate. As soon as Jane gets off the elevator, there's weird light flickering in the hallway, and the door says International Department. She dramatically opens the door, and some women come out talking, and they're just ignoring her. It's just like a normal office space.
Yeah, right.
There's all this buildup, and they're like, oh, hey, are you going in here, basically?
Fooled you.
So she eventually finds the office space. She's taking photos with the Polaroid. Nothing in the prints, until eventually she finds that girl from the accident in one of the photos kind of leering at her and looking not thrilled.
Yeah.
Jane tries to make a run for it, but then a framed photograph falls off the wall and cracks the glass. And the woman in it is in the Polaroid she took. She's the woman from the accident. Mm-hmm. What was her name?
Megumi.
That's right. So it has a list of the people who are in the photograph. Mm-hmm. And on the back, it says that the photographer is her husband.
Ben.
Dun, dun, dun. Ben.
So Ben knows the woman Megumi from the accident.
He knows her. So Ben's photo shoot's finished. I guess he's relaxing while Jane's off playing Nancy Drew, investigating. And he's relaxing with a beer, and suddenly the lights from the shoot start flashing, and the regular lights turn off. So I meant the lights from the chute, like the ones that are meant to flash.
Yeah.
Are flashing. And then the lights that are just like in the ceiling turn off. So it's just darkness. Yeah. And every time the lights flash, you see something creepy and, yeah, or weird, or you don't know what's going on.
That's like a mechanism that we've talked about in a couple movies recently, because they did it in Mama. And mm-hmm. then there was another one. Oh, and I think in Polaroid too.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
So it's like, I mean, not cheap, but it's a commonly used way to like build suspense, because then you can cause that you have an excuse or reason why something might just appear.
Yeah.
And then also, like, more so, I feel like in this one, in Mama, I felt like you were able, the flashes of light were long enough where you were able to really focus in and grasp what you were seeing. In yeah. this one, it was, I actually found it a little bit annoying because the flashes of light were so brief.
I didn't even see anything.
You couldn't even really tell what it was you were seeing.
Yeah.
And if you were seeing something or not.
Yeah, it was too short. I agree. So, I guess I had to rewind it a few times to be like, what's he seeing? So he sees the Megumi. And I wrote woman from the accident, but Megumi.
Yeah.
And so I said the Megumi. He sees Megumi. As the flashes are going off, and he's struggling on the floor, thoroughly freaking out. And suddenly, Jane shows up with her discovery, and Ben finally admits that he knew Megumi and they had a relationship. And he then goes off the, then we have a montage.
Yeah.
Time for a montage on his relationship with Megumi. Her father, it started off as like an office romance. Mm-hmm. They were having a great time, they were dating. Unfortunately, her father did not approve of their relationship, and she seems pretty heartbroken about that
yeah.
fact. And then her father died suddenly. In her grief, she became pretty obsessive and inconsolable mm-hmm. about her father's death, and then also their relationship not doing well. And he, I think it was like too much intensity for him.
Yeah. Like, I like how he says, like, I couldn't help it. I just wasn't falling in love with her.
I know. God.
Like, that's, ew.
Shut up.
It's kind of ick.
I know. It gave me Midsommar vibes.
Yeah.
Where she was in her grief and you're like, yeah, that's understandable. And the guy was like, oh, God, just like get over it. And yeah. you're like, oh, you're the worst.
It was also like really sad because like he was saying that, you know, her family was very traditional and mm-hmm. that her job as a translator at the company and her relationship with him was like her escape. Like this was going to be her way of getting out from this very traditional family and maybe like a very predictable future.
Yeah.
And so you can totally understand why it would be so important to her.
Right. Yeah. And as a woman, you can understand. You're like, suddenly things aren't perfect and easy for you. Mm-hmm. And we need like a little bit of support. And now it's just too hard. You're not falling yeah. in love with me. You yeah. know? Anyway, it didn't work out. It was all her fault, mm-hmm. according to Ben.
100%.
God, he's such a jerk. Okay, so she became obsessive. She followed him everywhere. He tried telling her to stop, but the relationship's over. Stop following me. Like, stop trying to pursue this.
Yeah.
You need to kind of let it go.
Yeah, he basically says she's, like, stalking him.
Yeah, she's stalking him. He eventually had his friends tell her to stop and step in some way, and then she did.
Thank God for Bruno and Adam, right? What yeah. caring individuals to step in and help smooth out the situation.
I know. I'm sure they did so very tastefully.
Tastefully.
So Jane is upset that he didn't tell her before.
Yeah.
He was like, this is all before we even met. This
He's
is
like,
before...
yeah, but then we started seeing your ex-girlfriend. Like...
Yeah. And he was like, it felt weird and awkward to tell her at first, and then yeah. at some point it's like he should have told her by now,
and so now it's too late,
and it was too late, and so he just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to admit it to her because he was kind of, I think, felt bad about how he handled it himself as well, maybe.
Yeah, he knew, like, it's not something to be proud of, so yeah. like if it was up to him, he wouldn't want his new wife to know about like a time that he was kind of shitty as a boyfriend.
Yes. So Ben tells Jane, you know, he's like, we can leave Tokyo. Let's mm-hmm. go back. Let's start fresh.
I can get another job. Let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm,
I won't risk you.
Yeah, because clearly things aren't working out in Tokyo. But then later that night, he calls Bruno to ask about Megumi. He's like, what did you actually, you know, what happened exactly?
Yeah.
And Bruno tells Ben that he's like, you know, it's weird because actually I saw her. She was just being weird in the street and pointing at me. Hello. He's like, well, anyway, good night. Yeah. See you later. So that little chestnut revealed.
Well, and like, so you would think, like, again, if we're presuming just what we're supposed to know at this point in the story, that Ben would now feel relieved to know that, okay, so Megumi's alive because you just saw her. You saw her in the city and like she was pointing at you. Okay, whatever. But she's not the woman we hit in the road.
Right.
Right, because you saw her alive. Or even if she is the woman we hit in the road, she survived. And so
he's like,
we don't have to worry about this anymore.
She's fine.
Yeah.
Adam's at his place with a woman who wants to be a model. She's a hostess.
Oh, my God.
And she's like, I don't know why I have to take my clothes off. He's like, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. You want your model.
Modeling, eh?
Hey, here, take this cowboy hat and stand around in your panties.
Yes. So he he's going to take some photos of you. Because he's like a modeling scout agent guy. And she wants, you know, to get a leg up.
Yeah. And he's like super, super smarmy. Like you can tell from when you first meet him and like his date to their dinner is obviously a model. That's the entire reason he has that job is to like basically prey, take advantage of his position and these girls wanting to get their career started to just hook up with women and, you know, treat them like objects. And like he's a scumbag.
Yeah. I got Audition vibes. Have you ever watched that movie, Audition?
I don't think so.
Audition is crazy and disgusting.
Yeah.
Quick little aside.
Okay.
It's a guy, I think they're in, it's a Japanese movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's in Tokyo or somewhere, but he is a casting producer guy.
Okay.
And he's mourning the death of his wife and he's very sad and his son who's like an older teenager whatever he's like you need to get out back out there so they make kind of a fake audition
For him to like for meet him somebody?
to meet somebody and it's kind of lighthearted and kind of fun
like it's a little innocent it's not like sinister
no and it's kind of funny and sweet and whatever but the woman he hones in on is a she seems sweet and all this stuff but what ensues is like the most insane movie I've ever watched in my life. Huh. And I cannot, I've watched it twice and I can't rewatch it because it's so horrifying.
Oh, I might have to try that out.
So that gave me those vibes. Like I have to take picture photos of you for whatever. And you're like, this is not like a real thing.
Yeah.
Obviously. So going back to the, to Adam and his house, he's taking photos of her. He's like, you're so beautiful. And she's like doing different poses and looking at the camera. The entity shows up in the camera and he's like looking in the camera. He's like, what the heck is that? He looks away. He moves his face away from the camera and then looks back into the camera lens. And then suddenly the entity blasts him with glass in the eye.
Yeah, so and it's like the viewfinder of the camera explodes back into his eye.
Yeah, and he's like, oh my God. And he like passes out or something. He's like, basically, it's like a huge explosion, essentially.
Yeah, and he's got like this big gaping red hole where his eye
used to be. Uh-huh. So Bruno calls Ben, and he tells Ben there's been an accident. And the, and he's like, I'll meet you at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So something happened to Adam. And Ben's like, oh my God, my bro, I gotta go help him. But suddenly you see Megumi with Bruno kind of in the background.
Yeah.
And you know, that's probably not good. So later Ben calls Bruno from the hospital. He's like, where are you? He's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
He's there with Jane waiting. And you see Bruno's phone ringing. It's a flip phone or I don't know, maybe a Nokia. And he presses answer and he's like, you hear Ben on the other line going, Bruno, where are you? You said you'd be here. We've been waiting. And you hear that and then you see.
And then doesn't he say Adam didn't make it?
I don't recall. Maybe that's what he says. Adam has died. And then you see a bloody hand and there's little bits of photographs all over the table. And you see a bloody hand and a razor in what you would assume is Bruno's hand, and it presses the button end call. So Ben wants to go investigate what's going on. He and Jane show up at Bruno's apartment, and it's all disheveled, and things are kind of, it's really dark in there. Stuff is kind of knocked around. And you see Bruno in his underwear, seemingly possessed, unresponsive, a little bit out of it, with dark circles under his eyes. And he starts running after Jane and runs past her out off the balcony and kills himself.
Yeah, because they're on, like, they have to be, like, at least the 10th
floor.
Like
a high rise somewhere.
They're really high up, and he just, like, ninja jumps over the railing on his balcony and dies.
Yeah, Ben's, like, hanging over the edge, like, of the railing, like, oh, my bro.
My other bro.
My other bro.
Two bros.
I know. So Jane doesn't understand. She's like, why is Megumi killing your friends?
Yeah.
Why is he, you know, when I'm the one who hit her with the car.
Yeah.
I'm the one who is responsible.
I'm like, she's supposed to be mad at me.
Yeah. And Ben is, he's like, we got to get the fuck out of Tokyo.
We don't worry about it.
How about we get out of here? But then Jane tells Ben, it doesn't matter. They go back to their apartment. She's looking through some stuff as she's packing it. And then she realizes something. It doesn't matter. And she notices that she's like, Megumi was with us before we even went to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees the entity and photographs of their wedding.
Yeah.
Before they even left the States.
Right. So going back to Brooklyn is not going to solve the problem.
Right.
But then we also know, we're like, oh, well, that was before the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So
what the heck? So the two of them go to Megumi's house, like her family's house, to go see what could be done.
Yeah.
You know, who can they talk to? Can they reason with her? Like, what's going on?
Well, but also, like, I think maybe do they think that she's dead now, or they agree that she's dead? Because, like, one of the things that that Jane points out is that they the guy at the magazine said that spirits are linked to the flesh.
Uh-huh.
And so she's like, I felt like they were like, we got to find her body. But maybe they were just like, we got to find her.
Find her, her body, or maybe her family or something that something will give like her give answers. And plus the guy at the magazine was like, there's unfinished business. There's also other things that are trying to be communicated. So they go to her house. There's no one there. They invite themselves in because I guess in Japan, the doors are open. So they just walk in.
They just slide. They just slide open.
They come in and they see a person, and it looks like it's Megumi with her back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hello, hello. And there's like a lot of hallways and sliding doors all over the place. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to get to her. And they eventually get to this person sitting in the chair. It's kind of like Norman Bates. Discovery, where she turns the person around. She's like, hello, hello, Megumi. Hey, hi, we're here to talk to you. And then it's like a skull.
Skeleton. Yeah, her like head falls back, and then all these fucking flies come out of everywhere.
She's super dead. And there's empty bottles of cyanide all around and an empty teacup next to her on the table.
And she's definitely been dead for a long time.
She's
mummified.
Yeah, she's been there for a long, long time. And that's that.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of narrative from Ben, like, well, we informed her family, and there's going to be a service and a cremation. And that's that.
Yeah, that's that. I just really liked that, like, the way that she was sitting in the chair with her back to them was, like, mimicked by how Ben was sitting in the chair in the earlier scene. And so you can see that, like, she manipulated him into that chair in that earlier scene and, like, positioned him just like her corpse was positioned. I'm like, ooh.
Ookie spooky. So Ben wakes up. Later that night, feeling like he's being cuddled by Megumi, he wakes up and he's like, oh, God. And Jane's like just sleeping peacefully on her pillow. And he's like, that was weird. And then he sees her in the room, and it's pretty ghostly and mysterious. Then she climbs on top of Ben seductively and takes her dress off to reveal a rotting corpsey body.
Yeah, it's like the same move that Jane did earlier when they were first in the apartment of like straddling him and pulling her dress off over her head.
She's like, I can take off my dowdy dress too.
I can be sexy. Oh, look, I'm rotting.
Oh, no. Very The Shining. So finally he wakes Jane. He's like, oh, it's time to wake up my wife. And then he He's like, there's, oh God, you know, I can't remember what he said to her, but he wakes her up. Mm-hmm. He goes to wash his face and he hears brushing, Megumi brushing her hair now. Apparently she's very just loudly. Out. Yeah. And she stops and looks at him again. She continues pursuing him. She unravels her gross tongue. Ben gets a mouthful of flies. Jane finds, you know, Jane's fallen back asleep.
Yeah.
And then she wakes to find Ben on the floor choking. And she yells at Megumi. She's like, he left you. He doesn't love you.
Yeah.
You need to get out. Leave us alone. Yeah. Get out of our lives. You know, you need to move on.
Yeah.
Basically.
Find a new man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So eventually the weird haunting stuff stops. Ben wakes up. He like coughs a bunch and something happens. And he's like, ah, flies. the haunting seems to have stopped. Later, they go to the funeral and the cremation. And Ben and Jane leave to go back to the States. And they're seemingly ghost-free.
Woohoo!
Yay. Jane wakes up to find a pattern of hearts on the table made with rose petals. Oh, how romantic. She grabs a disposable camera and takes a picture.
It tries to, but then she realizes that it's full.
It's full.
I better get it developed.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So then later, she has her developed photos and groceries and other things, and she notices that something. They were not alone. Well, she's looking at the photos, right? Mm-hmm. She's sitting down. She has her groceries. She's like, oh, let me open this in.
With, like, the tote, and it's, like, it's such a cliche of, like, she's got the tote with the flowers wrapped in newspaper and the baguette, like, the just completely unwrapped baguette sticking out of her tote.
Yeah. This is, like, the, what are Brooklyn groceries? You go to the bodega.
You get your fresh flowers and a baguette.
Yes. And nothing else. So she's opened the envelope with all the photos and was like, let me look at these really quick. So she noticed something. They were not alone on their wedding night. She sees Megumi crawling. It's like a flip thing where you can see this entity. She's on the ground crawling to where Jane's portrait is on the apartment wall. Mm-hmm. And so she goes to investigate, of course, because she's Jane and she has to investigate everything. She finds a suitcase that's in the closet right behind the portrait. And she finds it's got
an airline tag on it from Tokyo.
Yeah. And also this suitcase is freaking old as shit.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Busted.
Yeah. And it has a bunch of Ben's stuff in it. Apparently he can't be arsed to like unpack.
Yeah. He came back from Tokyo like 10 years ago and just left.
He's
everything.
He's like, well, I'm done with that. Threw it in the closet. Forgot about it. And it has Ben's camera in it. She takes the SIM card out of it and finds a bunch of horrifying stuff on it as she's clicking through it on her laptop. And
like she can barely even look at it.
She's like, oh my, like,
upset about it.
What the hell? So she sees that his, I can't remember, he like came home. And I can't remember if she looked at it and found this out from him, I think. And she's like, what the hell happened? I found this. And he's like, where did you find this? And it turns out his friends tricked Megumi or he helped him. You know, create this situation where he's like, I just want to have a drink with you, really, you know, like, let's just put an end to things, let's talk things out. Mm-hmm. And she was very like, oh, okay, and like desperate and sad. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my gosh. And they roofied her and took pictures of her in compromising positions with them. And the idea was to blackmail her. You know, stop stalking Ben.
We're going to show everyone these pictures
where you basically look like a freaking trollop. And he sat there Ben took photos as his friends are, you know, assaulting her and being
like
gross.
He says that they took it too far.
Yes.
Like, I wasn't doing it, though. I was just taking pictures.
He just took photos, and then he just went into the other room and sat down and just let it happen. Hey, did he sit down? Was it in that apartment where they at the in Tokyo?
No, I don't think it was the same apartment that he and Jane were in, because it was like in the office building.
Right. Okay.
Where they, because there was like during an office party and he lured her away from the party. Mm-hmm. And it was like he had this table set up in another room with wine and everything.
Yeah.
And so that's where they assaulted her.
Yeah. And she's like, Ben, you know, trying to get him to intervene. And he won't.
Help me.
He won't help her.
Because it's his bros.
Yeah. And he's like, they took things too far. It's not my fault. And
she's just like, wow, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah. He doesn't do anything as they assault her. Jane's horrified that he did that. And he let it happen. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm a different person now. It wasn't my fault. And she's like, yeah, you're a real piece of shit. And
she's like, how could you lived with this?
Yeah.
Like, that's disgusting.
Yes. And she's like, I have to go. I have to go think things over. And she's like, you know what? No, I don't have to think things over. I don't need to be with you for the rest of my life.
Like, I'm not spending my life.
I'm done with you. And he's like, don't do this to me. Don't leave me alone with her, basically. Yeah. But she's like, fuck you. So she storms off. And then Ben takes a bunch of Polaroids. He's like, where are you? Where are you?
Well, and he gets trapped. Like, when she storms out, the door locks itself. Like, he can't go after her.
Yeah. So he's like taking photos with the Polaroid, trying to find her. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, you've ruined my life.
It's just you and me now. It's what you wanted.
Yeah. And then he throws the Polaroid and it manages to snag a picture of him from the ground up. So we can actually see him full figured in the Polaroid. And he sees finally what's been causing his neck and shoulder pain this whole time. It's his lady.
He's given her a little. They're ready for a chicken fight. Yeah, is what they are.
She's been on his shoulders this whole time.
Yeah,
basically weighing him down, and that's what caused the his weight to be way too much.
Yeah, it was like 225 or something.
It was way too much.
Or 275 or something. But yeah,
where she was like looking at him and like, how the hell
this man does not weigh that much.
That's crazy, and his constant neck pain and his friends being like, well, you look like a bent over old man. What's going on? It's because she's been weighing heavily on him, quite literally on his conscience and his neck and his shoulders. So at this point he decides, you know what, I'm gonna electrocute myself with my photography gear. So he gets himself in the neck with whatever thing that charges, I don't know.
Yeah, charges like one of the big flashes.
Yeah. And then suddenly the lights go off in the apartment and that's the end, or what we think is the end. Mm-hmm. And then you see later a nurse going into his psych ward and it goes into a patient's room and it's Ben. He's all hunched over. He has a huge scar on his neck from the light and a bunch of scarring on his temples, which you would think would be probably electroshock therapy. And she hands him something and she's, you know, leaves, and you see the door closing and a reflection on the window of Ben completely hunched over, basically like hunched over onto his lap, and Megumi's completely cradling on top of his body, like a freaking slug attached to him.
Yeah.
And he's not alone. Mm-hmm. And that is the end of Shudder. Did you think it was scary? And it was kind of long, but there's a lot of subtle things.
Yeah. Well, and we had a few little sidebars. You know, I think it's fairly scary. I don't really remember how much it scared me when I saw it for the first time, because obviously for me, like the first time I see it, that's what I have to gauge it by, because once you know what's coming, you know the whole story, then your response to it changes. And so like with The Ring, for example, when I watch it now, I don't consider it scary, but I remember very distinctly that the first time I saw it, I was so scared I actually swore off horror movies for a while.
I remember driving home right after with a friend, and it was like two in the morning, and I remember being like so anxious that someone was like in my backseat gonna get me.
Yeah, from The Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mine was kind of similar. I watched it at Hillary's apartment in the city, and then I had to drive home, and then I had to like circle for a really long time to find parking in our neighborhood, and then I had to walk like two blocks in the dark to get to our building from the closest parking space I could find. I was so terrified. And so now, like watching Shudder now, I see it being scary the same way I see The Ring being scary now. And so I bet you the first time I saw it, I thought it was pretty scary. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of the ways, the scares that it uses, the tools that it uses, the story that it tells is like a lot of these American remakes of Japanese films. Like mm-hmm. they have, not to say like tropes or whatever, but they use a lot of the same mechanisms in the stories. Yeah, like Megumi, she's a creepy spirit. She's not quite as creepy as I was almost said Enora. What's the girl from The Ring? I just watched this.
Samara.
Mm-hmm. So not as scary visually as Samara, mm-hmm. because obviously with Megumi, we also most of the times we see her, she has to potentially be a living person that just happened, that is physically there.
Yeah.
And so she couldn't walk around looking like Samara. She had to be a little less scary than that. But I thought it was good. I thought that it was cool to have the real evil and darkness being the work of the living humans and not the spirit. That the spirit was a victim, and she, you know, she exacts her revenge as she was entitled to do. Mm-hmm. But it was the result of, you know, the living people being total pieces of shit.
Definitely.
Like they really did bring it on themselves. And she never harms Jane. Like she frightens her. But she never hurts Jane. And mm-hmm. she really is like, and I don't know if Jane actually says this at one point when she like, once she knows the whole story that like Megumi was trying to like warn her.
Yeah.
Or protect her. Like mm-hmm. she wanted her to know like who she married.
This is who you married.
Yeah.
You know, someone who says they don't have any control, but they totally did.
Yeah, just stood by and watched these people do this horrible thing and just went on with their life, you know? Yeah. I think that gives it, like kind of the deeper scariness, mm-hmm. below just being like creepy or jump scares or the imagery or anything like that is just like that really toxic humanity. That it's always good when you can add that to the supernatural spooky stuff because it just kind of gives it more weight. I would say obviously my favorite thing about this is Joshua Jackson. yeah. And it's funny because I forget like how much he pops up in movies here and there, like during this kind of time frame of like the 90s, 2000s, because like in the 90s is when he was on Dawson's Creek and then he was like trying to branch into movies. I'd completely forgotten because I randomly and ill-advisedly rewatched Cruel Intentions, which is, wow, that's a bad movie. But Joshua Jackson is in that for a little bit. We know he was in Urban Legends. Mm-hmm. And he pops up here and there, and I'm always, like, super happy to see him. And I also, I mentioned to Tom last night, I was like, I've got to say this on the recording tomorrow. Last night, he was actually at the NHL draft announcing the Anaheim Ducks pick. Because he, you know, his career-making role was Charlie in the Mighty Ducks movies. Mm-hmm. And he still looks good. Like, he's letting himself go gray, like, and it's a very salt and peppery kind of, like, sexy gray. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll watch anything with Joshua Jackson.
You know, there are our heartthrobs that are more endearing and sweet looking as they age, and you're like, oh, like fine wine.
Yeah, and he's one where it could have gone the other way because he has one of those faces that could have gotten really mushy, mm-hmm. and maybe it still will because like when you think of like Kevin Spacey, mm-hmm. like how before you know.
Before we knew all the problematic things. Yeah,
before
that he
we stopped seeing him anywhere.
Yes.
His face just kind of got like droopier and droopier. And I could see maybe that happening to Joshua Jackson's sweet little face. And he's not, I mean, he's only a year or two older than us. Mm-hmm. Maybe a few, but he's still in his 40s.
Yeah.
So, you know, that may still be ahead, but I have a feeling I will still adore him even if and when that happens.
Yeah. There's a lot of different people that I'm like, I swear to God, if these people are canceled, I'll be in mourning.
No, if I ever hear anything about Gary Oldman, I will be here post haste to put you on suicide watch.
I'm like, no, man.
Did you think that this was scary?
No, but because I think, for example, the flashing lights stuff was mm-hmm. like too fast and it should have lingered more.
Yeah, it was less effective because of how fast it was.
And then other things, but I thought it was fun, though, mm-hmm. and, like, smart. And I also enjoyed, when I first watched it, I was, like, fully on her side. I was like, you get those fuckers. Yeah. You know, at the end, right?
Oh, on Megumi's side.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Jane, too. I'm like,
well, yeah, because Jane was, like... She's
kind of roped into it and unwittingly.
And she was always trying to make it right. Like she at first she thought mm-hmm. it was her fuck up and she was trying to make it right because she felt responsible. It wasn't like she didn't give a shit that she hit someone on the road. It wasn't like an I know what you did last summer type
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. She was trying to take ownership of this massive mistake she thought she made.
Yeah.
And make it right. So I enjoyed her character because she was someone that I wasn't aggravated with you know like sometimes you watch something you're like why are you doing annoying... this why are you stupid why are you being a dumb American essentially and so she was a great main character. I liked her and she held her husband took him to task you know she's like you don't get to do that you don't get to treat me like that. She wasn't someone who's like, oh, well, you know, he had a really stressful time.
He was really upset about what happened at work.
And she's like, you know, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, she's like, how about you be a grown up and control yourself?
Exactly. So I was all about it. I thought she was great. and I thought it was the spirit photography part was pretty fun. I would have liked more with the medium, more of a revelation with that, because I think that was kind of wasted opportunity.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen the translation. Maybe it exists somewhere and we saw.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think you weren't supposed to know what he said because what I, especially once you know the whole story, I think you're supposed to look back on that scene and see that that he was actually legit, that when he sensed what was present in the photos, he understood that Megumi had been horribly wronged by this guy. And mm-hmm. that's why he turned on them. And that's why Ben would not translate what he was saying. Because what he was saying was like, you hurt her. You did blah, blah, blah. You wronged her.
You have to make this right.
Right. And so Ben's not going to translate that for Jane.
Right.
And so that's why he was like, this guy is a what did he call him? Scam artist?
He's a scam artist.
Yeah. So we're just going to get out of here. We're on our own. And so I think that not translating for the viewer what the guy says was important because we weren't supposed to know yet at that point in the story.
Yeah.
What that Ben was a culprit, that he had done something wrong.
I understand that. But I think it should have later been revealed.
Oh, like they did with the weight on the scale?
Yes. Mm. Like, I think it would have been nice to know. Like,
yeah.
You know, like the translation, like you harmed her. You know, you have to make this right or something. So we could have more with the medium, more a reveal that he was a legit guy, maybe. Mm-hmm. And he had insight on why she's so pissed.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been fun, at least. But I also enjoyed that she was a spirit that was wronged, who was only attacking people who wronged her.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that much more than like the grudge. You just go in the house and you're mm-hmm. screwed.
Yeah.
And that's bullshit.
In the ring. Like, anybody that watches this movie, I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah. And it's like, why are you, you're a vengeful spirit and no one is
safe.
Safe.
Yeah.
Versus you get the people who fucked with you and deserve it and have it coming. And and Jane is a...
And then you're done.
Yeah.
You just spend the rest of your life drooped over your dream man.
Yeah. So I appreciated her much more as an entity, although I loved The Grudge. I'm like, oh, man, I love that idea. And that movie is so good. But so I appreciate her as a ghost.
Yeah.
A ghost girl.
She's a respect. Respect for Megumi.
Yeah. And
she went about it the right way.
Sure. And I thought that she was perfectly entitled to having love and 100%. Comfort. From her boyfriend after her dad died.
Yeah.
Because he didn't approve of her dating an American. And the American's like, oh, I'm not that into you anymore. Fuck you.
Instead of comforting you, I'm going to drug you and let my friends assault you.
Yeah. And make you think that, like, I just wanted, like, let's just clear the air. Come on in. And she looks so hopeful. And you feel for her.
Yeah.
You're like, God, you are a real piece of shit.
Yeah.
And you're responsible. And I hate your friends.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they all died. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'd watch them die again. I'll watch the movie again.
Well, and that's it. Like with Ben, like at the beginning, obviously you think he's this great guy. And then you get your suspicions and it builds and builds and builds until the end and you find out he's not a great guy. But with Bruno and Adam, as soon as you meet him,
you hate
maybe
them.
Not quite so much Bruno, but you're like, oh, like he's a bro. You know, you're not like, oh, I want to marry this guy. But with Adam, as soon as you meet Adam, you're like, you're a scumbag.
Yep.
And so that's the kind of thing where, like, we were talking about before, where she was like, ew, you used to be friends with these guys. I'm so glad you grew up. Like, mm-hmm. I wish they had.
But he didn't grow up.
He didn't. Well, maybe he did, but that was, like, she made the point that he could live with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, that he could just put that behind him and move on and go have his happy life knowing that he did this thing.
True. But part of growing up is also taking ownership of your what you've done to people.
Yeah. And none of them knew that she had killed herself.
Yeah.
You know, like, she obviously, like, the losing her father, being subjected to this assault, like, being in this situation, she went and took her own life. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know, obviously. Yeah. And that's why, like, again, it's any movie where you get a big revelation at the end. You know, you go back and reevaluate all the stuff that happened before, just like with The Sixth Sense. And so if you look back at the phone conversation between Ben and Bruno, when Ben calls Bruno and is like, hey, do you know, like, what happened with Megumi? Because mm-hmm. now that we know what actually happened with Megumi, we look at the questions that he asks and the words that he uses do make sense. Like, they had to be very deliberate, because at the time it had to sound like they were perfectly innocent. Mm-hmm. But what they said had to align with what actually happened once we know that later on. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that Bruno was like, oh yeah, I just saw her. So they know that they did this terrible thing to her, but they both think she's still out there living her life.
Yeah.
Right? They don't know that she killed herself.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then.
Little twist-a-roos.
She exacted revenge.
And yes, she did.
On those jerks.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the most groundbreaking remake, but it's fun.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, moving on, our next movie.
We're going to move away from photography.
And go into the phone call realm.
Phone calls. Yeah, next time we'll talk about One Missed Call, which, hold on, also 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the same year as Shudder, One Missed Call came out. So check that out if you dare, if you hate yourself. I don't know.
I checked it out from the library and streamed it on my app on TV.
Yeah.
So that was kind of nice. I'm like, oh, just.
I'm glad I didn't check that.
Didn't pay for that.
But anyway, we'll talk about that next time.
All right. All right. Well,
peace out.
Discuss this later. Okay. Bye.
Bye.